Welcome to part two of our conversation with Dave Spinks about imprisoned souls. Tell me more about your life when you were in the military and then even into law enforcement. How did that square up with being a ghost hunter? I know you said, you know, sometimes there'll be people just, you know, they want the verification. And I have military in my family. I have police officers in my family. And, you know, some are open to the idea of ghosts. Some are, hell no. It's, you know, very fact based, you know, and if you don't got the fact, it ain't real. So tell me how that squared up for you with your colleagues and fellow service people and fellow officers and such when you were out there and you were kind of the guy that people would go to on those bizarre calls that would come in and such.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something I didn't do announce publicly, so to speak. People knew I did it, but you know, I didn't dare talk about it in open, especially in those days, because it was not accepted like it is today.
Sure.
It wasn't pop culture. So like it is today, mm-hmm. You know, TV has changed that. So, you know, and depending on your geographical location, like I'm from what they call the Bible Belt. So if you did what I did, man, you're messing with demons. You would be criticized. You could even be shunned by people, you know, for talking about it and doing it. But yet there's all these people out there that are having these experiences that need help. And that was my intent, to try and help them. To try to help explain, look, you know, yeah, you got something going on here, but you don't need to be worried about it. You know, it's most likely this or what, most likely that. And then there's the cases that are definitely negative in nature. So with my colleagues and stuff, some people were really open to it because they themselves had gone on calls or whatever, and they couldn't explain it. And they, you know, they would often ask me questions. What did I think about this? You know, they went on this one particular call and this is what happened, you know, what do I think it was? But it was just something that you didn't really talk about in the open, you know, or they'd be sending me to the head shrinker, the department head shrinker or something.
Sure.
I mean, so military was more open because there's a lot of people, you know, it wasn't like being in law enforcement then. Mm-hmm. But, I would often take friends of mine. They want me to take them out. We'd go to a supposed haunted location and try to get evidence. And sometimes we would, and I, you know, we'd share it and they'd blow them away. And some were scared. Once they, you know, people are scared of the unknown. That's the bottom line. They don't even want to mess with it. A lot of them, but other people are open to it. And then they capture evidence with you, or they go along with you and they're blown away by it, and they either get scared or they want more of it. You know, it's just, you know, the fight or flight syndrome type deal. But in law enforcement, the same thing. You know, it was something I did. People knew, but I didn't really talk about it much in the open, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I would often get called by, you know, friends, hey, my cousin or my, you know, so and so's got this going on, can you go check it out for him? And I would.
Did you ever have any case where, you know, you're just called out, you know, on a 911 call or something, and someone just cannot be explained? I'm not talking like an in-depth murder mystery or something of that nature, but just here's what they're saying that they experienced. You believe them. They're not on drugs. They're not, you know, under the influence of something or have some sort of mental illness. They're just, you know, they're there, but there's something that happened to them and you don't know how to explain it other than, I'm sorry, you know, ma'am, sir, it seems to be done, but I don't know how to explain it either.
Well, I worked in state corrections and federal corrections.
Okay.
And I will tell you firsthand, some of these people that are incarcerated, you can look into their eyes and it's like they're a hollow shell. There's not a soul in there. And then when you read some of the things these people did in their jackets and stuff, it's, you know, you can just tell that they've been either possessed, mm-hmm. so to speak. They're you know, they're just not. It's almost as if they're not human, and they just look like a hollow shell walking around. And they will kill you if they have an opportunity. That's their sole purpose. And what that is to me, it felt, you know, some of these guys, you know, and ladies too. They have a whole different aura about them. They're not, their eyes are cold and dead, if that makes any sense. And they need to be locked up because they are almost animalistic in nature, you know, and any chance they get, they will hurt someone. And there's quite a few of them in the prison system, let me tell you.
When you're experiencing that and you're, you know, entrusted with, you know, keeping these people behind the bars and outside of society because they're there for a reason, I'm sure it runs through your mind. You got to be thinking, well, has this person always been like this? Have they always been this hollow of an individual where you look at them and it just seems like they'll just kill and they'll feel absolutely nothing? Or do you feel like something happened to some people at some point in time to get them there? Or are some people literally just born evil, for lack of a better term?
I think there's multiple different situations that happens to people. I think a very few may be in fact born evil, as you said, so to speak. Their wiring is just not right. You know, they have no compassion, no empathy, no anything. And there's others that things happen to them and it turned them into that type, you know, whether they were oppressed and then possessed or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. Because when you see some of the stuff that these people actually did to other humans, I mean, it's just unreal, you know, that another human could do this to other, you know, just anyone, innocent children or there are many victims that they just did some of the most heinous stuff. And I found, you know, many times these people are into Satanism. They are into really dark occult things. And you can just, you know, tell. And they all fit that kind of profile, so to speak. And there's some bad ones out there, just let me tell you. I mean, I think that some people, you know, had horrendous things happen to them. And over my years of doing this stuff, I've noticed that, and this is my personal opinion, you know, these, for lack of a better word, I don't throw around demonic lightly, because I think true demonic possessions are few and far between, but there has been an uptick in those over the last numerous years, for whatever reason. But I think that those type of entities, they seek out people that have, whether it be drug addiction or alcoholism or mental disorders, and they exploit that crack in those people's auras, and their sole purpose is to seek and destroy souls.
Sure, where it's almost like a different person.
Yeah, and it gives those things a way to jump in and create havoc, you know, and cause people to do things they would never do. If you think about it, you know, they used to call, and they still do, you know, they call alcohol spirits. Sure. I think that's for a specific reason. It's not just, you know, it lowers your defense system, so to speak. And those type of activities do lower your defenses and let things, you know, people do things they would never normally do if they hadn't been drinking or using drugs or whatever the case.
How often, when you look back at your time working in the prison system, and again, I don't like to use the word demonic or demon that much either, because I do agree, I think it's few and far between. But for the sake of what we're talking about, where you have a large group of people incarcerated in a prison system because they've done things that are bad, you naturally would have a higher rate, I would think, of negativity there. How often do you feel that there is something supernatural, paranormal, ghostly, demonic, whatever you want to call it, that played a role in that individual getting into the prison system?
Well, being in, you know, working in the prison systems and stuff, it's the most dire, you know, just imagine, you know, your freedom's taken away. You are, it's highly oppressive. It's highly negative in those situations. I mean, it's a city full of criminals. Just think about that. Basically, sure. You know, you have anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 people in there. They've all done bad things of some sort, whatever the case. And some have just made mistakes that got them put in there, you know, bad mistakes that they just got involved with the wrong people and got hooked up, and that's it. Others are truly hardcore criminals. That's their way of life, and that's all they know, and that's what they do. but it's a highly negative environment. It even affects staff a lot. The negative working in that environment day to day, not knowing if you're going to come home alive. It's a highly negative, stressful environment. And a lot of officers get PTSD from it. You know, they turn to drinking and drugs. They have family problems, and it's just like a disease that spreads, and it's very, very negative, and it causes a lot of destruction in people's lives.
Sure. Here's an interesting question for you, because obviously with investigating ghosts and paranormal locations and such, so many, obviously, paranormal tourism is a thing now, where people will buy what's thought to be a haunted house or location, and that's essentially what keeps it alive and keeps it going for it, avoiding the wrecking ball. So in many ways, it preserves history, which is a good thing. But we also often hear about old prisons and things of that nature and people investigating those locations. After a prison is decommissioned, and it doesn't have to be the old Gothic-looking castle. I mean, it could be something that was built in, you know, 1979 and has just simply outlived its space capacity for wherever it is. Once it's decommissioned, is there ever a way for that facility, especially if it's like a maximum security, high-risk type facility, for that structure to be used for anything else? Or in your view, is it going to be so stained with a negative emotional imprint that it's had for all those years of those residents being in it, that there's one of two things that can happen? Either, I guess, you can go investigate it for ghost hunts, or it really just needs to be taken down because you'll never truly escape the negativity that's imprinted itself on the building.
Yeah, I think that's basically, you hit the nail on the head there, because you're exactly right with that. All those, you know, prisons, especially prisons, maximum security, even medium security, and even sometimes in the regular, you know, minimum security, there are murders, you mm-hmm. know, there's definitely rapes. There's all kinds of negative events that occur in these locations. And, you know, they're tragic events that could cause haunting or paranormal activity. And really, there's no other use for them other than, in my opinion, than to do a haunted location. Or there's even some places that have tried to refurbish these old prisons. Mm-hmm. Some are museums, some are even some of the insane asylums that have the criminally insane. They've talked about making them into like a conference center and hotel. I mean,
yeah.
And whenever us as investigators, we hear about this, we start laughing because they're going to say, well, those guests won't be staying long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, eventually there's going to be some crazy events that go off in there, and the word's going to get around. So, I mean, we've seen it over and over again. I've seen it over and over again. When I go to old jails and prisons, I get some of the most off the chain activity, because it's like some of them that are intelligent, they know I'm ex-law enforcement, or they call me cop, pig. I'm going to, you know, they threaten, they're going to cut my head off, all kinds of crazy stuff that we've got on ghost boxes and EVPs and everything else. I've been scratched in them. Old brothels that have ran or have been run by the mob. I've actually had my head cracked open by something unseen in one of those places.
Wow.
And it was witnessed by numerous people. They saw the knot on my head and the blood coming out of my head. Mm-hmm. And I had a little gash, and he said that his name was Ian, and he hit me with a shovel, you know. So it was crazy. So, and each place is different, you know, so to speak. You know, you could go to an old orphanage that kids were abused in, or you would treat that totally different than you would, say, an old prison as an investigator. You're not going to go in shouting and carrying on and, provoking anything, because those were children, you know. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, those children's spirits may be stuck there. So you want to try to help them. You know, you don't try to go in. And some of these more negative locations like jails and prisons, you know, I talk to them just like I would have when I was working in them, you know, and they seem to understand that better. Mm-hmm. And they react in a more, a different way than, you know, I'd say a child. If you're going to go try to communicate with a possible child spirit, you're not going to go in there and try to be all hardcore with them. You're just going to talk to them like they're children, you know, on their level. So you know, as an investigator, you got to take those things into account. Each place is different. You never know what you're going to get, and it can be dangerous.
An interesting thought. I mean, in many ways, some of those structures, facilities that get decommissioned, it's almost like a Chernobyl situation where it's like there's a half-life here and you're not going in there for another 100 years. But it's something spiritual. It's something ghostly, something that made its mark in that way, shape, or form. It also kind of... Go ahead.
A prime example of that would be Moundsville Penitentiary in West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Hardcore prison. They had a big riot there. A lot of people were murdered, raped there, all kinds of crazy stuff. Officers were killed there. And lo and behold, when they decommissioned it and everything, they found a pentagram in where the old warden's house used to be inside the prison that was built inside of the structure, an upside down pentagram. Now, that's a state building that's built by the state of West Virginia. Somebody had to put that in there intentionally, an upside down pentagram, a negative symbol. Why would that ever have been put in a state built facility? I would never know.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, with Moundsville, that whole town was built on top of a Native American complex, with, you know, a sacred Native American grounds with bodies that were buried under there and everything else, and the settlers came in and pretty much just flattened it out and built right on top of them. So you have all these different trigger environments that could cause a haunting, you know, and negative activity to go on. And former inmates that I've interviewed from Moundsville that spent time in that prison, was one of the most darkest, worst prisons in the United States at the time, so they would often have paranormal experiences in that place when they were in there. And, you know, it's just one of those places, you know. So somebody had malintent when they built that pentagram within the structure of the building itself.
It makes you wonder a little bit, you know, in recent years, over the last 10 years or so, where people are finding the decommissioned structures and that's their last possible attempt to save them because they've been sitting vacant for 30, 40, 50 years. And then suddenly it's like, well, we're going to tear it down. And then somebody steps in and saves it. It makes you wonder if the people 30, 40, 50 years ago, when the things were shut down and decommissioned, if they already knew something that there's no saving this building. There's nothing this thing could be possibly used for. But because it was a different time, different place, different atmosphere, about talking about ghosts and things of that as open as we do today. But the decision makers of those buildings just kind of knew there's no point in trying to or even wanting to give this to someone else or sell this to someone else because it will not be habitable.
Yeah, that's kind of like where I'm at. So I bought my own haunted location a few years ago, called Willow's Weep, and it was built in 1890, one of the most bizarre-shaped houses I've ever seen. It's built in the shape of a cross. It's full of Masonic symbology on the inside, and I had investigated it, you know, numerous times, became friends with the former owner, and lo and behold, one day she called me up and said, I'm done with this house. We can't live in it. It's tried to kill it. You know, they never even got to live in it. They were trying to refurbish it for their son. And all this paranormal activity was going on. So reaching out for help, she started calling numerous paranormal investigative teams. And that's how I heard about it. And I ended up buying it from her because she swore it tried to kill her and her husband on multiple occasions. And numerous paranormal teams had gone in there, collected some phenomenal evidence, and people were attacked, you know, scratched and you name it. It had everything you look for in a paranormal location. And when the opportunity arose to me, and I'm all about the history of these places too, so I said, well, I can own this location, have my own paranormal lab, so to speak, and also preserve a small piece of history, you know, a structure that was built in 1890. And so I did it. And, you know, it's something that I'm proud of, but I'm also very leery of because of the amount of death and things that have occurred in this house. It's a highly negatively charged atmosphere in the house. And I wrote a book about it. I got all the history together and that I could find. And there's a lot of missing years there, but it's got so many things. It's just full of what you would look for. You know, it's like an onion. It's got many different layers of things that could cause paranormal activity. And it's just a project, and it's an ongoing project for me.
That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Dave Spinks about imprisoned souls. A big thank you to him for joining us on our program and sharing his experiences with us. We will have Dave back on again very soon to talk about the building, the home, the structure that he now owns that is very haunted. So stay tuned for that and press subscribe if you haven't already. Being a gravekeeper, you're probably already there. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for your support. Thank you.